The good people at Manscaped have partnered with us here at the Beautifully Designed Game podcast with an exclusive offer just for you as a thank you for tuning in. Visit uk.manscaped.com, enter promo code TFT20 for 20% off your order. Believe me, your balls will thank you.
Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Welcome once again to the Beautifully Designed Game podcast. Today, I am delighted to be talking to a man who needs absolutely no introduction other than to say two words, which is Stanley Chow. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Marcus. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat. Yeah.
Excellent. Brilliant. Well, thank you for joining us. Can you give everybody a little bit of an introduction to yourself and exactly where we find you in the world today?
Okay, so I am Stanley Chow. I am an illustrator of, I guess I'm quite well known, you know. I live in Manchester. I'm 47 in a couple of weeks' time, and I'm sitting in the basement of my house, and that's all I can think of off the top of my head.
A basement that I'm just going to jump on there and give people a wee bit of a description, because it is a basement that I think people might want to know a little bit about. So looking to the right-hand side, there's a clothes rail that looks like it has football shirt-related type material to it. Is that a RoboCop related print on the far wall? Is that right?
Yeah, it's from the Crazy for Cult exhibition a few years ago in New York, I can't remember who is the
Gallery 88, 1988.
Yeah, they had an exhibition. I was in it, and that was the poster that kind of.
I know that exact print.
It's on my wall. I was quite proud to be part of that show. And then next to that is a painting by Richard Estes, the original painting's in Madrid somewhere. But I remember seeing the painting in Madrid, and it was like, I never had a painting blow me away, you know. I was like 17, really? 18. I was crying. I was looking at this painting, crying.
Yeah.
And it was the Richard Estes telephone booths. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. So I bought a print, and it's been with me like since I was 17, that print.
Really? And you were in Madrid at the time. That was the first time you saw it.
Yeah. So it's just kind of stayed with me, and like it's the telephone booths are in New York outside Macy's. So every time I go to New York, I just kind of like see how those telephone booths have changed now. It's now one like little telephone booth. You know what I mean? You know, not even a telephone booth. It's like a telephone that sticks out from the ground. You know?
So
I go back every time just to see what that spot's like, you know.
When
I visit New York, I find little places of just to look at it and see how it's developed. I mean, another place in New York is the Led Zeppelin sleeve, Physical Graffiti. There's a building on St. Mark's Place, and I just go and see that all the time because I love that cover. So every time we knew it, I just kind of
tribute
to it by just giving it a little visit, you know.
And is New York a place you visit often? I know current circumstances, but outside of the current world,
I try to go at least once every 18 months, you know, just because there's work there as well, you know, and like and I've got a lot of clients there, so it's good to kind of like see them face to face as well.
And do you typically work from home? We're chatting to you in the basement at the moment. Is that where you work typically day to day?
Yeah, it's where I work now. I mean, I used to have a studio in the centre of Manchester, but like obviously since COVID and lockdown, we decided to convert my basement and turn it into a studio space.
Yeah.
It's just because it was obviously like central Manchester turned into a ghost town. There was nowhere to go out and eat, and there was nothing, there was no point in going into city centre Manchester basically to work when I could just turn the basement into a studio and just walk downstairs, you know.
Yeah. Can I just jumping on nowhere to go and eat? It's funny you say that, because one thing I was going to ask you about on this chat was fish and chips.
Oh, yeah.
Because I my mum called me just before this recording, because so I was going to be driving south to Lincolnshire this weekend just to see my nephew play in his last game of the season. And one point I was going to make this trip was to get fish and chips while I was down there, because it's a thing for my Opa, my granddad, to have fish and chips now and again. But also fish and chips in Lincolnshire, it's good fish and chips, because you get the fish from Grimsby, you know.
Yeah.
And but I know, because I remember reading about yourself saying how you learned to draw when you were young on the the chip paper. And so I would imagine you yourself have a pretty good taste for good fish and chips. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is, like, our family recently become vegetarian now, but,
okay.
I'm allowed to still have fish and chips on a Friday. They're the kind of house rules now, you mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, but yeah, I still. So, fish and chips is always just get the kind of my way not into total vegetarianism.
out of vegetarianism. Okay.
So it's like, yeah, but yeah, it's obviously I grew up in a fish and chip shop. So
So
you know, that was my, you know, I mean, my only kind of source of amusement and entertainment was like, here's a whole load of chip paper, here's a pen, fill your boots basically, and that's kind of how it started really. I mean, as long as I can remember anyway. I mean, I didn't really have any much toys or anything like that. It was just kind of like from year one is like, you know, my parents were working in Chippy. I mean, to look after me, I had to be downstairs, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, they couldn't afford baby sisters or anything. So I was sat in the back. Here's some chip paper. Shut up. Here's a pen. Here's some chips. Here's some rice.
And was there ever a period of Stanley Chow wanting to be a professional footballer or a fireman? Or was there ever anything else that seemed to be other than you becoming what you are now?
No, I knew from a really young age that this is what I wanted to do for the rest of my life, you know. I was always going to be an artist, you know. And by the time I got to like 14 or 15, when I had started working in my parents' chip shop, I knew then, it's like, I don't want to be part of this, you know.
Right.
Working in a chip shop isn't, you know, it was like, so basically illustrating and drawing pictures was my way out of the family business, really, you know.
Okay.
And it was like, I don't want to be talking to drunk people after 11 o'clock, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't want to be like burning my arms in chip fat, you know what I mean? Stuff like that. It was just kind of like, that was too much hard work, you know?
Yeah.
I recognized I was good, from young age without blowing, bubbles up my ass. So it was always the kind of like, how do I end up doing this as a profession, really? That was a goal from literally from the age 10 onwards.
Okay.
What do I have to do to not work in a chippy?
But there's also Stanley Chow, the DJ, as well. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, the thing was like, you know, when I left home, if I was going to be living at home, I had to be working at the chip shop.
Right.
The moment I got an opportunity to leave home, that was almost kind of like, I can't work in a chip shop as well. I've got to cut loose here now. And the thing was, it was like, I didn't want a proper job, So I was searching for work as a designer, illustrator, and I didn't want a proper job. and I had records, you know, and I had a few records, and then I accidentally got asked to DJ. Well, no, it basically says, like, someone, can you DJ? And I was like, yeah. Never doing it before. And that's my way in, you know what I mean? Okay. It was like, and then I DJed at one place, and then someone saw me from another bar, says, do you want to DJ at our bar? I said, yeah. And then it just kind of grew and grew and grew to the point where I was DJing like 4 or 5 nights a week, you know. And how it happened, I don't really know, you mean?
Yeah.
It's just that people just kept asking me, you know. I said, yeah.
Do you have music on a lot while you're working?
Weirdly enough, no. Even though there's a record player they can see behind me, I only have music on when I'm fully kind of like in fifth gear, you mean?
Okay.
Right. Kind of like I don't know if you know what I mean, but you know, when you're working, you are going through the gears. You mean it's like I'm getting distracted here. You know, but then you get to a point where it's like, okay, I'm totally in the zone. Once you're in the zone, that's when you can put music on.
Yeah,
and music becomes a less of a distraction, but like a fuel.
You mean I find it like I know exactly what you mean, and it's like a driver for me. Yeah. And often, sorry to just jump in. But it's like specifically when I've got like 20% final art left to do, and I'm really into knowing exactly how I'm wanting it to be finished off now. That's exactly where I would put on music to do what you're saying. Yeah.
So I still listen to music as much as I can.
Yeah. And,
but in terms of kind of actually working the music, it's There are obviously specific times when you can do it, really.
I get distracted a fair bit, I would admit, by having either TV shows or movies on in the background to have as kind of background noise, especially anything Alan Partridge from any particular era will never stop being an easy loop or Peep Show or anything like that. Yeah, yeah. Because of working from home, they're an easy win for me. Yeah.
Well, I tell something like as I've grown older, I think I'm more easily distracted. You know, my attention span is a lot shorter now. And I'd say before children and before getting married, I mean, I used to work with the TV on, like a guitar on my lap.
Right.
You know, whatever social media, it's just all there, you mean?
Yeah.
But now I simply can't do that. You know, it's like, if I'm watching TV, I can't even have people around me when I'm watching TV because I want to listen to everything. Everything's, I've got to compartmentalize everything now to a certain degree. It's like, there's no way I can have a football game and watch and work, you mean?
Yeah.
I've been able to do that at all, over the last few weeks. It's like, I've missed games, you know, because I've been working.
You know what I really like doing with football, live football these days, and this is acknowledging how talented I find radio commentators are with any sport, really. I like listening to live sport on the radio while I'm working because especially football and the way that they describe it, and it gives me that wee bit in my head to make it up myself. How it might be, you know. Sorry, go on.
No. I guess what I've done is I've been listening to some games on the radio, and as soon as they score a goal, I'm legging it upstairs. I'm turning the TV on to see if I can catch the replay in time. Oh, the good thing about the radio is it always seems to be about 20 seconds ahead of actual TV.
Yeah.
So you've got enough time to just kind of like leg it up to another room, put the TV on, and then catch the goal, and then that was good, and then go back down to work again. But that's what I've been doing.
and talking of goals at the minute, how are you? So the recording is happening the day after the groups. So all the groups are finished at the Euros now. That's right. So how as an England fan, how are you feeling about the Euros?
I obviously want England to win, but but at the end of the day, you know, that's what I want to see. I want to see my United players do well. I think that's ultimately, last night it was Portugal Portugal, France, and I was like, I just wanted Pogba to score, won the goal. I'll still love Ronaldo. You know, I wanted Bruno Fernandes to score as well. You know what I mean? So it's that was my main interest last night in the football. You know,
yeah.
I think like with England, it's like we don't know what team's going to turn up. Really, you know, it's like, I mean, they haven't looked great, even though we won two games out of three, and it's like I'm not going to moan about them. You know, we got through, we've done what we have to do.
Yeah,
but you know, but like. I think, you know, I guess I'm not going to have too many high expectations, basically. You know, you just kind of like, you know, yeah, we're a bit shit, but, you know, if we win, you know, then all of a sudden that's great. You mean, I kind of, I'm not really worried about, if England win, great. If they don't win, it doesn't matter. Yeah. I care more about Man United.
No. well, tell us about that, actually. Tell us about, you as a United fan. So was there a family connection to United before yourself?
Yeah, the family connection is pretty strong, really, because my dad, back in the 60s, he works in a restaurant in Old The Edge called The Mandarin. And right. Like Old The Edge being like where most footballers live, even from the 60s, you know. Still now there's a few footballers who live in the Old The Edge and Wimslow area. And so my dad works in The Mandarin, and he'll have like all the 60s players coming in, like, you know, Nobby Styles, Bobby Charlton, George Best, Dennis, all that lot, you know. And like, yeah, he used to go on about Nobby Styles a lot, being the friendliest dude he's ever met. You mean it would be Nobby Styles that would be kind of like going to the rest of the team and getting shirts signed and stuff like that. You mean it? But he was the so my dad loved him, you know, like just because he was such a kind of like a kind dude, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, God rest his soul. So when I was growing up, it was just Man United, Man United, Man United, you know, like for my dad. And then when he left the restaurant, we bought a chip in Altrincham, which is kind of also quite near where footballers live in Cheshire, you know. And like we used to have like Lou McCarvey coming in, Gordon McQueen, the 70s lot coming in, you know, and yeah, as a tribute, I got my Lou McCarvey.
Nice,
So my dad got to know Lou McCarvey and stuff like that. You know what I mean? They were hanging out at the bookmakers. You know, I'll always remember. It says, "Oh yeah, Lou McCarvey's at doing the horses." You know what I mean? It didn't mean anything to me. But then, obviously, kind of like. Around like the age of 4 and 5, when you're watching TV and football, there's Lou McCarvey on TV. You mean it? And then all of a sudden, like, then all the dots started connecting. You know what I mean? You know, it's like, and that's when I started getting into football. Really, the minute we kind of see the guy in real life, and then he's on TV playing football, and I was like, well, you know, I remember kind of like the kind of like light bulb moment where, as a kid, it's like, this is it. You know,
the earliest memory that I have, and it's a really vivid one of seeing a United player on the TV, was Danny Wallace. When you think of United kind of late 80s, this is the Adidas kit that you think of. And I have a really vivid picture of him on ITV on a Sunday afternoon. And that's my... That's my earliest picture of a United player on TV. Right. Yeah.
Well, for me, ironically, it is Lou McCarvey, but in the away shirt. You mean, you know, that was the
right? Okay.
Yeah, it was the away Admiral shirt. You know what I mean, with the three stripes down the side. That has always been the first kit that always sticks in my head as a United kit. Really.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, you know what I mean? Because I think that was the kit they wore when they beat Liverpool in the FA Cup final.
Yeah, okay.
In 1978 or something like that. I can't remember. Is it 78? Anyway, it was a white away kit anyway that we beat Liverpool in.
Yeah. Is there I have a real joy of seeing United in dark kits, like black especially.
That first season, sorry, go on. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to ask you, do you have any, is there any particular United kits, or are there any particular times you like seeing United in any, you know, maybe it's a blue away kit. Are there any certain United kits that come to mind for you?
Well, that black kit, that you know, the famous Cantona kit, was it 93, 94?
The view sharp view cam.
I mean, like, cam, yeah. That was the first time I had a black kit. I was like, we look so mean.
I was like,
whoa, that black kit is like, we look like, we're like Darth Vader. You're not going to beat us because we're wearing a black kit. You know what I mean? We look really tough. And I remember, like, and from then on, I just felt we need a black kit every season now. You mean it?
Yeah.
I do like the blue kit because, you know, obviously the blue kit is a tribute to the 1968 European champions, European Cup win. You mean it?
Winners, yeah.
So when we're, but you know, there's the 92 away kit, which is always a, which we always hot back to, you know.
Yeah.
I remember like not liking it at the time, but as soon as we won the Rumblows Cup or Milk Cup or what it was called, then that was it. This kit's great. It becomes iconic when, you know, if you're playing in a garish kit and you start winning trophies in that garish kit, that's when the kit becomes remembered for, you mean, you know.
Well, the why I like seeing United in a white away kit, I always, so the Cup Winners' Cup win against Barcelona, and that Mark Hughes goal, that's a real favourite football goal in general for me, and the kit from that win. So like for me, it's if there's a particular win that the side achieved wearing a kit, it can then elevate what that kit means to you and has that kind of recall, you know. And this season's third kit, the zebra kit. So my nephew, he's just getting into kind of old kits and noticing them now. And he said to me that he thought that this season's third kit would be for his generation what the blue and white kind of patterned kit was for back in the day, you know, that it's a kit for this era. And I love that shirt, so it was nice hearing that from someone of that next generation, you know.
I love it too. I even bought the tracksuit.
Yeah, I remember. I was going to bring that up. Actually, there is not many people that could pull that off, but you absolutely are able to. And I like to think of you wearing that when you're watching United play. That's it's a strong look.
It's a strong look. Yeah, I wouldn't wear it. I'd say I probably would have worn it out like for actual games. But we've had like 18 months. I'm not going to stadium, so.
Yeah. Do you get to games often when you know the stadium's open? Were you able to get
you know, I got a season ticket. I went to the Fulham game, the last home game of the season which was quite good, you know. And I was out there the City game as well, the last game before lockdown, which was immense. But I definitely missing actual football, you know, being at the ground and stuff. You know what it's like. You know, it's just the atmosphere, just hanging out with mates. More so now, hanging out with mates, basically. You know, because as I say, you know, it's like all my mates have got kids and whatever. The times you see them are much less reduced. Like through because we're grown up, basically. And then there's also now there's COVID, and it's like, oh, you know, it's like, so any opportunity to see your mates is always it's always good now.
Absolutely. Was there ever a period, or is he still around now, Stanley Chow, the football player?
Oh God, no. Stanley Chow, the football player, retired about 6 years ago.
Oh really? Okay.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, it was like, we used to play like 11-a-side actually in Sean Park. But then like when my kids came, I kind of stopped playing football for a bit. But then a guy kind of like round our way just said, like, do you wanna have a game? Like, he's just teaching disadvantaged kids, you know. And I thought, oh, you know, come on, you mean, it's like you'll be perfect in just kind of like in just chatting to him, you know, not about football, but just in life in general. You mean, you're good kind of you'd be a good ambassador for him, you know, kind of thing. So yeah, I went along and played football with him. It was like seven as hard it was, and I was getting, you know, having not played for like 2 or 3 years, I could feel like I was getting a bit tired. So I thought, right, I said to the goalkeeper, you fancy, I want to go in goals now. I'm a bit knackered, you know.
Yeah.
And so we decided to go in goals. Because I felt like if I carried on now, I would get injured, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so I went in goals. So like towards the end of it, I was playing. Like I was in goals, someone took a corner. I decided to go for the corner and try and catch the ball. Got the ball, landed, and basically it felt like someone shot me in the back. I crumpled in a heap, basically. I just kind of like, and yeah, I had three grown men carry me back home, basically. You know, wow. It was like, I couldn't walk for a week. So yeah, so my back hasn't really recovered since then, really, you know. So,
oh,
so,
man, sorry to hear that.
So, you know, it's like I can do a bit of like light sport, but you know. But if you know, like even going cycling is stuff like, I mean, I enjoy cycling, but I can't, you know, if I cycle too much, it's like the next day my back's just like in agony. So it's so yeah, that was my football career over pretty swiftly. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I used to see myself as the Jan Mulby.
Oh really? Football. Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean. I was good at dead ball situations, you know.
Yeah,
but I didn't really run up an attack, nor did I defend much. I just kind of hovered around the centre circle, trying to spray long passes. You know?
Yeah.
That was me, really. You know, like you won't see me legging up the wing.
No. Can you give us a brief insight? Well, it doesn't have to be brief. It can be as much as you want to go to. Tell us all about Stanley Chow FC, and from how did that develop from an idea to what is quite an iconic series of football shirts and football kits unto themselves?
It started like, the reason why it started was just like, I wanted to start doing work which is solely focused on football, you know, because my illustration career is quite sporadic in terms of like it deals with all different kinds of genres, from advertising, fashion, computer games, editorial, publishing, whatever, you know what I mean? But I wanted to do something that was specifically football, you know what I mean? So I started doing like I created a kind of a template of a player. It was like a, you know, a mannequin, so to speak, you know. So
yeah.
And from that mannequin, I just illustrated like hundreds and hundreds of shirts to put on the player, and then that kind of I basically illustrated all my favorite shirts basically, and kind of made the mannequin by changing the skin color and the hair color to make it kind of represent a certain player. I mean, like for example, you know, this is the example. Here's one that turned into a coaster. It's just basically like, so basically I just turned his skin brown and put a wig on him, and it's Rude Hullet basically, you know.
Yeah.
So and I then illustrated him in the orange 1988 kit, and then I just produced prints, you know, of as many variations of my favorite kits, and like I was doing that for about maybe a year or so, and I was thinking, this needs to move on. What's the next stage from actually drawing football kits?
Okay.
The next thing is actually making them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like it's just trying to work out a way of like how am I gonna kind of start making shirts because like I'm creating, as well as illustrating my favorite shirts, you're kind of like in your head already creating ideas for your own shirts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of it is down, you know, and like I think with football, it's all based around, like, for me now, it's like a good football shirt is based around, you know, the actual template as well as the sponsor and the quality of the badge. All these things are really important. You see, you mean you can have a great shirt design, but then if the sponsor is like American insurance, health insurance, it's ruined it. You mean it? And if the badge is a bit crap, it's like you just ruined a great shirt. Yeah. So, it's the combination of the good sponsor, good badge, and
absolutely.
So I was just working around those ideas, really, you know. And then, like, the first idea was, like, you know, like, I don't smoke now myself, but, like, I used to love the Marlboro logo design, whatever. So I just started drawing, like, you know, a kind of a Marlboro-based shirt. And I was thinking, like, how can I actually make this, you know? So I just went on the kind of, like, you know, the football shirt websites and just to see what kind of team wear was available.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Just completely blank shirts, you know. And I saw the red and white, this red and white kind of, almost kind of like an the Ajax-style shirt.
Yeah, with the band in the middle, yeah.
Yeah. And I felt like, but all the way around. Great. If I just stick a Marlboro logo on there, and also with Marlboro logo, there's also a crest as well. That'll work really well as a crest yeah. and the logo. And it's like, so I made a kind of a template, a prototype of that basically. And I thought, okay, I'll put it on my Instagram. Oh, this is getting a lot of likes, you know. Let's mass produce it, you mean, like that. So I thought, okay, I think I could sell these, you know, me, you know. And I like the thing was, I never want to go down the route of kind of like pre-sales, you mean, you know. I just want them to kind of it's obvious way of getting rid of stock, but at the same time it's like it's a way of selling things which I just don't like, you mean, you know?
Yeah.
So basically I had to kind of write, okay, I'm gonna get 100 shirts made, put them all, make them limited edition. I'm gonna do an unboxing video.
Yeah.
And, like, you mean, you know, like, we made a little video, an unboxing video, like, and you also get a free print of a footballer wearing this Marlboro shirt.
Yeah.
And literally within, like, and I said the release date is whatever, June the whatever date it was, and then like sold out within like 2 hours, you mean, you know? And I was like, okay, this is the start of Stonglish OFC, you mean, you know? So I mean, like, it's like, okay, it gave me the confidence to create more shirts now, you mean, you know? But because the thing with the Marvel shirt was obviously trading standards got in touch, says
okay,
you know, advertising standards got in touch and say, oh, you can't have this. Says, I know I can't have it. I was totally aware of, like, someone's going to slap my wrist.
You know, right, you know? Yeah.
But the good thing was that I sold out by the time I had my wrist slapped anyway, you mean it? So, but then it just kind of got me thinking about creating other football shirts, you know.
Yeah.
So the first idea was, like, I saw like a striped Inter Milan black and blue shirt, and like, yeah, I just wanted to do a take on the Pirelli, you know.
Yes. Logo.
So just put, instead of Pirelli, I put Pie and Mash. I couldn't think of, you know, not realizing Pie and Mash is like a hooligan organization, you know.
Oh, really? But, is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's, I like, didn't know that.
Pie and Mash, yeah. Yeah, I didn't know that until afterwards, you know. But I also designed the Stanley FC, like, the first, it's the Stanley FC badge was kind of based around the Inter Milan badge at the time. So it was a circular logo.
I was going to ask you specifically about that. So I'm looking at the moment, there is the sausage, chips and gravy. There's the home and away shirts.
Yeah.
Sorry, can you just let people know where they can find Stanley Chow FC online?
It's just stanleychowfc.com.
And you go
straight to my shop, basically.
Brilliant.
And, I think only the sausage, chips and gravy ones, like, are available. Obviously, that's based on the old 1980s Sharp United shirt. But the thing was, like, I mean, like, I wanted to do everything like based around food anyway. You mean, it was like, I mean, I just did a shirt, just had Doner Kebab written on it. And like, just because Doner Kebab, it's just the irony of having Doner Kebab sponsor you, you know, any football team. You know, cause, just because I'm an unhealthy fast food addict, or was. So it's just kind of like, it just worked it in my head as something stupidly silly. You know, it's like the sillier the better, basically. You know, and like without being ludicrous. So Doner Kebab, and like, and I don't know about the word Doner Kebab. You can write it in any font, and it looks right. You know, it's one of the words.
Yeah,
few two words. Are like you can write anyway, and it's like, oh god, that.
Yeah,
it's because of the umlaut. You got to make sure the umlaut's on the.
Yeah, that's true.
I know, and it just works as a you know. But anyway,
and also it happened like D's and B's and K's are nice, are typically nice looking characters themselves. Yeah. So both words happen to contain a lot of typically nice looking characters.
Yeah, okay. So I just thought, okay, I'm gonna put the words Doner Kebab on a football shirt, have my Stanley Cherry FC badge on it and see how it does.
Yeah.
And I thought, sold a shitload of them. So you know, so something was connecting with people, you know. I have this silliness like that involved food products and football, and it's kind of, you know, it kind of worked in my head. And then Stanley Chow FC became like, it wasn't just Stanley Chow Football Club, it was Stanley Chow Fashion Couture, Stanley Chow Fish and Chips, whatever, you may know. The FC just became like I could reinvent that as anything I wanted to really, you may know.
Well, can I ask you about your very earlier work as an illustrator? There was quite a fashion illustration look to your work. Is there an influence in that style of fashion illustration and where your work is now?
Well, no, I think like when I started out as an illustrator, I wanted to be a fashion illustrator. You know, I mean, that was the thing I wanted. That was my, you know, I'm going to try and break into this world of fashion. You know, so I ended up, you know, I mean, I was doing loads of kind of style magazines at the time. I was also loads of teen magazines like you know, Just 17 and More, and you know, doing all the kind of the kind of style sections. You know.
Yeah. Okay.
But then it's, you know, what really annoyed me was it was for me, it was hard to break into the fashion scene,
right?
For whatever reason, you know what I mean? But also, I was finding people could see me with, and they were pulling me towards doing more lifestyle illustration.
Okay,
and I was like, you know, and then I realized doing that for like 5 years, it's like this ain't what I wanted to do. You know what I mean? I was doing really nice jobs. Like, I was actually working for Marks and Spencer's, doing just kind of like fashion illustrations to give to photographers to work on to produce adverts and stuff like that. You know, they were like, you know, I'll go into a room, like the guys at Marks and Spencer's will put all their whole range, their seasonal range in front of me. So just fill your boots, man. Just like use all these clothes and see what kind of like style ideas that you can come out with, and then I'll draw them, and then we'll end up kind of using them, getting a photographer in and photographing your illustrations, basically your poses, okay. And stuff like that, you know.
Right.
And like that was great. I loved that bit, but then it just kind of, that work kind of dried up a bit, you know.
Okay.
And I ended up doing like yoga poses and.
Oh really?
People drinking in cafes, and I was like, this ain't what I want to do. And then I needed a massive rethink, you know. And I thought, okay, so I'm not gonna get into fashion world, you know, that's what I've almost come to, you know, appreciate, is like I'm not even mentally prepared for that fashion world, because it is a different world in terms of like in terms of how people are, really. I mean, everyone's really glam and just, you know, and it's all darling and all this kind of stuff, and it's like, I can't deal with this shit.
Yeah, you know, okay.
It's not me, you know. I mean, I see it, and I can, and you know, and people are, you know, the flamboyance of people is great to see, but it's just not me, you know. So you know, so I had to have a rethink, and then it was just kind of like, right, rethink what do I love doing most, and that was drawing faces, really. But I guess that's another part of our conversation. But yeah, but also, yeah, that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be a fashion illustrator. So having kind of just being so it's good to be able to go back after 15 years or so, and then do more fashiony stuff, you know, like so yeah, because these are the things that are important to me, like football, food and fashion are the things that are the most important thing to me, kind of outside my family, you know.
Yeah.
So I wanted to kind of bring them together some way, and I guess making football shirts is the actual, and having stupid slogans on,
yeah,
the front that say sausage and chips and is encapsulating me, basically, you know.
Yeah.
In all my interest in one.
If there were if there happened to be a football club outside of United that were to approach you to say, Stanley, could you we would like you to design all three of our kits for next year, you also got to choose right now what food sponsor or what food be on the front of that club as well. And I know this is enormously just putting you on the spot right now, but
yeah,
is there anything that particularly comes to mind, or even a particular club?
You know what? If any club approached me, it would be great. You mean, in fact, that reminds me, actually, like, I don't know if you heard of the hip-hop chip shop. They're like a little... they got a restaurant now, but when they started out, they just had a little food truck. But they got
now
they've got two plots now, which but I sponsored them I sponsored their five-a-side team. So that was my first foray into kind of like, you know, bringing what I love into kind of like into football and food and stuff, you know, but
yeah,
in terms of if any team asked me, I'll be up for it, you know.
Yeah,
and the slogan, it probably MSG would be the sponsor. You mean I'll find a MSG production company.
Yeah,
like Ajinomoto, like the Japanese brand, and I'll stick that because MSG's had a bad rap, you mean, and I feel there's nothing wrong with it, you know. And then nice three letters as well to kind of that look well together. And
it's okay. Would you keep the typeface as it is at the moment?
It depends on it depends on
the shirt itself.
On the shirt itself, yeah, I guess.
So
I'll promote MSG to the max and tell people it's great.
Happy days.
And but it could be any football. In fact, there is a football club in there called a Belgium lower league team which is called KFC. I mean, or South African. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
What is, you know? So but yeah, but all these things kind of interest me. I remember I was looking for, like, there's a Spanish team in the lower leagues. Their shorts are sponsored by KFC, which always entertain me, amuse me. You know.
Well, Spain often seems to be a country, and I don't know if it's one particular club, but maybe every other season you see a shirt that has a print of essentially a close-up photo of prawns. Something or a Simpsons family across it. Yeah. And Spain seems to be a country that's pretty open to trying something super out there when it comes to their club kits.
I think there's less regulations, aren't there? I think, like, the Premier League have regulations in what their shirts can have, you know, where I guess in Spain they don't. I mean, there's a beef for FC, wasn't there? They had a photograph of a DJ, like, with Dex on the shirt, you know, which is kind of like, it's a fucking hideous shirt, man. but yeah, it's something that I wouldn't mind even owning.
do you have much of an affinity with boots at all?
Football boots.
Yeah.
You know what? I always bought Puma.
Oh, really? Okay.
Puma. I think it was Diego Maradona. I always bought the Puma ones. I don't know the names of them.
Puma Kings.
Puma ones and they had the molded studs, white molded studs. They were all. I got them when I was a kid, and I stuck with them until I grew up. Basically, meaning I'll buy the closest one. What would it cost? Super Kings at one point. You mean I can't remember?
Right. Yeah. Okay.
I'm not worn a pair of football boots, but like I said, since I got injured, you mean?
Yeah.
So, but I always had the Pumas. You mean? I had my eye on the Predators. You mean?
Yeah.
Purely because of Beckham's involvement in Predators, but
yeah.
But other than that, you know, it's like no boots have never really kind of like. I'm not have the same fascination with boots as I had with football kits.
Yeah. Okay.
Talk about football boots a lot. You see, I'm like, it's like on previous like football times, like, oh god, he's on about boots now.
But for me, it's because of playing as well. So I so I've got a justifiable excuse because I think if you didn't play. With boots, then if you were to have that same level of interest, I could imagine it being a little bit of a question of how can you justify that if you're not actually wearing them or making use of them, you know. But I'm always firmly a Predator man, absolutely, yeah. And Adidas do occasionally release. Some modern day variants of kind of harking back to the day, so it's nice to see Adidas is still kind of recognizing those because that was a good looking era of football boots.
Well, I still remember the there's a documentary about the making of Predator boots. It was Craig Johnston, wasn't it, for the ex Liverpool player?
Yeah.
Basically, I want to kick the ball. I want to curve more. So he put the little, you know, the little spikes on the front, and he kind of, it was amazing. I remember it really clear as day that I think it was on Blue Peter or something. You know where?
I remember the
Craig Johnston.
It was footage of him in Australia developing the technology at the time. Yeah,
yeah.
I do remember that?
Yeah. It was good, you know.
And so you touched a wee bit earlier on your portraiture work, and it's an area of your work, you know, chatting to you here as we are talking about football, it'd be a bit remiss not asking Stanley Chow about his portraiture work. It's really almost become an industry unto its own, and what a signature creation it's almost become, a Stanley Chow portrait, the look and how iconic it's almost become in illustration itself. And where did it start, you doing portraiture work? To kind of such a degree.
Doing portraits was like all I did at school. I mean, I did portraits of all my mates, all the teachers and stuff like that. You mean, pop stars, just in a kind of like a, you know, not dissimilar style to do now. You mean, they were cartoons, but they were portraits at the same time. They weren't too kind of stylized and exaggerated caricatures, but they were just enough to kind of like remain respectful to the person. You know what I mean? Without kind of making their nose too big or eyes or ears too big, you know. So you have to maintain a certain, you know, like truthfulness, I guess, you know. And then, like, the thing was, it's like, it was like when I was leaving art school, it was like, do I do more of that stuff or do I do more fashion-y stuff? You know what I mean? And I felt like there were so many great portrait artists at the time when I was growing up. And like the people, all the caricatures you see in newspapers and stuff like that. People like Gary Smith, and I think he's called Charles Griffin. All these, I thought I'm never gonna be as good as them. You mean Robert Risco is another good guy. I'm never gonna be as good as these guys. You mean? And I thought, like, I'm just gonna not do it. I'm gonna fashion it. I can see a gap in the market. I'm gonna go fashion. You know,
Okay.
And but then, you know, but then obviously I told you about my fashion story.
Yeah.
But, and I had a go, you know, like 10 years doing this stuff, and then it's like, right, I hit a point where, right, portrait, I want to do portraits now. It's what I loved doing as a kid, you know. So I'm going to carry on, you know, I'm going to start working portraits, more portraits into my work, you know. So I started doing kind of like fake fine art music gig posters, you know. And like I did the White Stripes, I did Iron Clute, and who are based in Manchester. But like, yeah, obviously with White Stripes, this could be another tale to tell. I ended up getting a Grammy nomination for working with White Stripes afterwards, you know. But in terms of football, I just did a whole bunch of... Well, mate, it wasn't a bunch of United footballers. It was just Wayne Rooney, basically, you know. Kind of like, Wayne Rooney was like the first kind of, and the only footballer I did at the start, you mean, as amongst other kind of celebrities and musicians, you know.
Yeah.
Then, like, I think it was during one of the tournaments, I posted, like, a picture of Rooney on Twitter. And, I mean, like, this was going back, we're talking about 2008. You know, okay. And posted him on Twitter, and Edgar Davids saw it, and Edgar Davids says, "I want one."
Okay,
and I was like, "What? You want me to do your picture?" And like, so yeah, I did a picture of Edgar Davids.
Yeah,
and then it just exploded for me, really. You mean, as well as getting the White Stripes Grammy nomination, doing Edgar Davids happened, and then I ended up. For Mega Davis, I did a picture of Gareth Bale. Like, this picture of Gareth Bale ended up in Sport magazine, you know, the free magazine you get.
Yeah.
It was on the cover of Sport magazine. And from then on, it's like, I got emails like every other minute saying, like, do you do prints? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was like, I do now. You know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah. that kind of all started like a whole new kind of ball rolling of, you know, yeah. Of being recognised as someone who draws football faces, but I didn't do that many, you see, you know what I mean, at the start. It was from there, that's when I realised, oh shit, I've got to do more footballers now, you know. And then I just ended up doing more footballers. I did a Socrates one, which got picked up by like the art director of the New Yorker at the time was a massive football fan. He loved Socrates. He saw my Socrates picture, and then employed me like to work for the New Yorker. You know what I mean? And I'm still working for the New Yorker now, you mean? So it's kind of it's just so yeah, that weird kind of like a few months, it was like a whirlwind in terms of like creating a buzz, you mean? And so that's how I ended up doing football portraits, just because I could see, you know, like no one else was doing them at the time, I don't think, you mean?
Right, yeah.
And it's like, you know, I think football portraiture was different in terms of like you know, the photographs or people literally just tracing over you know, in terms of illustration, you mean there were you mean you'll get like the really stylized overdone caricatures or you get photographs, you mean there was nothing kind of like in between in a slick graphic style, you mean that felt you know, in tune with the modern game, you know what I mean? You know?
Yes.
And I think what I did just kind of was doing it at the right time, really, you know?
Yeah. And can you, just going back briefly, can you give us an insight to how a Grammy nomination happened?
Well, this was nuts. Like, well, you know, I did the work for the White Stripes, and I ended up designing a little USB stick with the White Stripes coats. Yeah. Shows on, you know, and then it did it got released, and then a few months later I got a phone call, oh by the way, and what you've done has been nominated for a Grammy Award. For oh great, you know. And it was like, but at the time it was admittedly, it was a weird time, you know, because my dad had just died. And it was like, oh, you know, I wish if my dad was here to see this. That was like, that was my first feeling was like, you know, if my dad witnessed this, it would be absolutely over the fucking moon, you know? But you know, but he literally kind of like, the nomination just literally happened that like about a week after he passed away, you know? Wow. And for me, like as great as it was to be nominated, it was also kind of like, Like mentally, I was going through a pretty dark time, you know. Yeah. So I never actually ended up going to the actual actual awards. You mean it?
Yes.
I went to India instead. Went to Goa instead to kind of like just take them away. Remove myself from.
How long were you in India for?
No, we weren't there for long. Just like a holiday, but it was like a long, but it was just enough to kind of, just not be, just not getting myself involved in.
In
real life, kind of like I just need to kind of like anyway, I'm going back to space.
Has there been do you still ever hear from the White Stripes at all? Because that's some achievement to have been Grammy nominated.
The thing was I would be chatting to their manager. I never actually spoke to Jack or Meg from the White Stripes, but I was chatting to their manager and stuff like that. And they said, whenever White Stripes ever come to England, we give you backstage passes, you can meet the gang and whatever. But then literally, they split up. That year they did win a Grammy, but then they were going to have a tour of a European tour, and then they decided to split up. So it was like I never actually got to meet them. So it was that was a damn shame. But anyway, but the thing is, but having that on my CV was the biggest platform one could have. Time in your career when it's like, it was just around the time of the recession, so work was pretty slim, but it allowed me to kind of stick my head, give me a platform to work from, basically. At a time when social media was starting, and you can see the internet really kind of you can see things happening on the internet with Instagram, Facebook, and all that kind of stuff, and all these things helps, and especially when you can add a Grammy nomination onto your profile, it's kind of like it's the kind of exploiting people on the internet, and exploiting is not the right word, but you got to enhance your own profile.
It's telling people what you've achieved. And telling everybody, which is brilliant. I've got a setup here of two monitors, and while my eyes keep getting drawn to the monitor on my right, I am going to say it because I'm keep being distracted by it. Just to say that the collar on the sausage, chips and gravy, Stanley Chow FC shirts, it is so good to see a football shirt with a collar. I'm so disappointed by shirts just not having collars to any degree, barely at all anymore. And the Umbro shirts you've used for those it's a nice size of a collar. With the V-neck as well,
it harks back to the 82 kit, that the United 82 kit had the collar. You see, and it was the kit. It was actually the kit before we actually got the sponsorship. It was a kit we had just before Fergie joined. I remember right. So that actual kit never actually had a sharp sponsorship. But then I thought
times changed.
Anyway, it was good when I saw that kit available on the Umbro website.
That worked
for everything. It was almost kind of like, worlds colliding as well.
Yeah.
But the whole thing about people have asked me sausage shit. It's so stupid. But the thing was, do you remember it's still on TV now. The Johnny Depp advert. Perfume advert, Sauvage.
Yes.
If you go around town, in some cities, it's people have adopted it and changed the U to an S, no, the V to an S. So it says sausage. And from then on, it was like, I just wanted to do a shit and a sausage on it, but I needed to have a good reason, you know. And then I felt like, oh yeah, there's enough letters in Sharp, just or the S and the A, to make it look like I'm write sausage, but to still make it look like Sharp, you know.
Yeah, no, I think so, absolutely.
But obviously, you know, you wanted something else underneath, kind of like you needed black in it, basically. You know, the whole thing like my mind is red, white, and black. You know, so you needed a touch of black to kind of to finish it off, really. You know, that was the thinking behind that. It's stupid, I know, but for me, in my head, it works.
Well, no, it does, absolutely. And so what's happening for you the rest of the day? It's I can tell you right now, here in Glasgow, it's gloriously sunny today. And I've got I'm playing football at 3 p.m. today. It's a 7-a-side match on the Thursdays, sometimes 8-a-side. It's a good day. It's a good day in Glasgow to be playing football outside.
Well, weirdly enough, like the weather has taken a turn today. Even though if you look on the weather app, it said it was meant to rain all last week in Manchester, but it hasn't. It's been glorious weather. But today has been a bit overcast today.
Yeah.
The rest of the day, I'm gonna be drawing more portraits.
Oh yes.
New Yorker. I also got other portraits for other companies. I mean, I've got five companies that I work for who've constantly just given me free portraits to do.
Okay.
It's kind of like essentially kind of like my bread and butter, really. You mean it?
Yeah.
And
sorry to jump in, but while it's in my head, one question, or I don't know if it's a question, but one thing I was going to say in our chat is, do you have some kind of brilliantly managed calendar that has either people's birthdays or significant anniversaries in cultural just in culture, in popular culture? Because whenever anybody has a birthday, seem to have a piece of portraiture or a piece of work ready and already existing, very often in the case.
Well, it's a stroke of luck and coincidence, really, because I've done literally thousands of portraits, you know, and like not all of them I've shown either. Some of them just stay in my kind of like in my folder for this reason, you know. So you go on social media and it's like, it's Marvin Gaye's birthday. It's like, okay, I've done a Marvin Gaye.
Okay,
stick him out, you know, get a few likes, you know. Because I think like the secret to the secret to establish yourself on social media is to keep reminding people that you exist, you mean?
Yeah.
So it's like because there's so many different artists. This obviously, you know, there's thousands of artists there who all want to kind of like have a piece of the action, you know, in terms of getting well known. But the only way to do it successfully is to keep reminding people that you're still there. Mm-hmm. So having birthdays and deaths and whatever and stuff like that is a perfect way of just reminding people that you still exist. You mean,
yeah.
I mean, like it's like, because at the end of the day, it's like I want commission work as much as any other artist. You mean, it's what pays the mortgage. You mean,
yeah.
So it's like So my tactic in terms of trying to not remain relevant, but obviously remaining relevant is important as an industry where it's very it's fashion orientated. You mean it's like, you know, people's fashions change. You mean one minute people prefer this style, next minute prefer that style. Trend is the word I'm after. Yeah, so it's like I want to kind of be able to kind of sail above that, you mean, not rely on trends, but like I want to remain relevant all the time, you mean. So you just got to kind of, regardless of what the trend is, so you got to kind of keep reminding people that you're there, and if you can ask the question, it's like, what's your tip for budding artists? It's just to keep reminding people that you're there, exist.
Okay, brilliant.
And that'll be my tip now. It's like I keep, you know, you can do all the pictures in the world, put them all in one place, but people aren't going to go there.
Yeah,
you know? You got to put these things in front of them. So, yeah. So you just gotta. So that I don't know how we ended up.
No, it's brilliant. No, I asked you a question and you gave us a super deep answer. Thank you very much. That was brilliant.
And you're talking about I've literally have like thousands of portraits. I've done everyone practically. I mean, everyone on note has been done. So it's just I've got to find a time and a place to kind of like put them out, basically. I mean, you know.
Yeah. Happy days. And well, brilliant, Stan. Well, can you let the world know where, or at least remind them where they can find you online?
I think the easiest way is to go on stanleychild.co.uk, and from there on there's links to my Instagram, my Twitter, my Facebook, my Tumblr, whatever.
Yeah,
Stanley Chow FC. It's all linked into in that one portal, basically, you know. So stanleychild.co.uk, and you'll find ways of getting in touch with me and whatever, and commissioning me and stuff like that.
And can you don't obviously have to give anything away at all, but can we get a little tease as to future Stanley Chow FC releases?
Well, I kind of put it on hold because it could they only kind of happen when I got an idea that work. You mean
Bill. Yeah. It's good to know.
Yeah. So it's whilst it's kind of, you know. I mean, like I've got to kind of like search the internet, look at all the kind of like places that sell football shirts and whatever, see what then get hold of a shitload of shirt blank
templates,
you know, and then once they're done, then I'll have the idea and it's all kind of you know, it's kind of like it's a long process, you know what I mean? If you get one idea, it's like. It's like the problem with one idea is it takes about 6 months before it even comes out.
If I may say, and I'm sure you are not somebody who is short of people giving you ideas or suggesting things to you, in my mind, and you know what, as I'm between the posts this afternoon with a bit of downtime, I might distract myself thinking about a Kappa Stanley Chow FC kit. You know, how you would work with a Kappa template is a very exciting thought.
Oh, right, yeah. Well, I've done one, actually. I have done a Kappa shirt. Like, it's not a Stanley Chow FC shirt such as it was more of a tribute to the Beastie Boys.
Oh, really?
Find it. I've got one left, actually.
This is exciting.
Here it goes. It's a bit of a... So it's a tribute to the Beastie Boys. So,
yes.
If you've seen the... if you've seen the actual... Their book, they stood outside this pizza shop.
The Stromboli pizza. Yeah.
It's on St. Mark's Place. It's on the same road as the Led Zeppelin building I was telling you about.
Yeah.
So like St. Mark's Place is just this historical street in East New York, you know. And so there's a Volkswagen logo, obviously, because you know, back in the day they were wearing their Volkswagen chains and stuff like that, you know.
Yeah.
And like and the black and white alludes to just being Italian, really. Juve is the first team I think of.
Yeah.
I see a black and white shirt, and there's obviously Kappa as well. Even though they were Jewish, the Beastie Boys, it's like because of the pizza, it's there's a bit of an Italian flavour to it.
And like,
it was important to have a cap for me. It's like having a Kappa do this shirt. Well, I wouldn't have done it like if it wasn't a Kappa shirt.
Oh, really? Oh, nice.
Because I think like any other brand, just it wouldn't have felt right, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm quite proud of this one. But like,
yes, you should be, man.
You know, I didn't do too many in case I got sued by somebody.
Again.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Stanley, thank you very much for your time today. It's been fantastic.
You're welcome.
Brilliant.
It's good to chat to you again. It's like whenever you matched again.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I was thinking the other day, the guy we met after the match that time. Do you remember years ago? We met for a drink after a match at United, and there was a guy just started talking to us after the match, and he ended up proposing to his wife on his phone. And he was only around with us for one drink, and that was it. And then he disappeared.
I don't remember that. Actually.
It was a long, long time ago.
Yeah,
I actually think it might have been after Paul Scholes' testimonial. Actually,
right, that could have been right. Yeah. That kind of rings a bell now.
Yeah,
when we played New York Cosmos.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like they are. You know what I mean? Like before that game started, it's like the idea of like Man United testimonial playing New York Cosmos, and it's like New York Cosmos, who are now defunct now, but like just imagine the testimonial playing that classic 70s side. You mean?
That would have been
awesome, and that's how we imagined it. Before watching the game,
yeah,
and actually getting to the game was like, oh yeah, it's a testimonial. It's not.
Well, they had Eric Cantona involved to some degree at that time, because they and actually it's funny, you can see how much Umbro must have thought that there or how much Umbro must have put into it, because you still see now all of the Umbro Cosmos stuff that they did at the time going around, because
I've got a few of them, you know. It was a really
nice look that they were going for. It just didn't take off, unfortunately.
I've got a few of those shirts just to put a sponsor on. You mean? The New York Cosmos Umbro one. I was gonna get doing. Have you heard of Nathan's Hot Dogs?
Nathan's is
the big New York hot dog company. I was just gonna stick a Nathan's. It will look awesome because Nathan's is the same colour as the New York Cosmos, you see, you mean it? So that would have worked. In my head, that was working, but I couldn't find the right green vinyl to iron it on.
Tough. Well, brilliant. Well, Stanley, thank you very much for your time today, and I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists, and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.